This is week two of our fall practice period in the year 2012. The topic of the practice period is spirituality and creativity. Those two words have a grandiose sense to them. Creativity sounds like something very important, as does spirituality, something bigger than us and to be achieved. But quite honestly, spirituality and creativity is simply bringing our attention to the moment for something new to arise. Last week, the assignment for the first week of practice was to simply sit. I'm at home right now at Mountain Lamp making this recording, and I just looked out the window. The sun is behind the hill and dusk is coming to the valley. And I noticed sitting down in one of the Adirondack chairs by the garden was Guadalupe. And she wasn't reading, she wasn't doing email, she wasn't listening to music. She was just simply sitting, watching the light change, seeing the colors of the garden fade in the oncoming darkness. And that's what I mean by this practice of simply sitting. Often in the mornings at Mountain Lamp, I like to sit out on the porch in one of the chairs and watch the sunrise over the mountains to the east. I do that every morning I possibly can, any of the clear mornings. I stop and I watch the sunrise. Sometimes I'll be down at the garden. Sometimes I'll be walking out of the meditation hall. But that first light, I like to stop and see it. I like to see the sun move over the days and the months from very far north to really far south in the valley. Many mornings here, it's cloudy, so we don't see the sun come up over the hill. It's a personal practice of mine to have the intention to stop and watch the sun rise over the mountains every time that the morning is clear. This practice of simply being still in the presence of the world allows us to touch into the wellspring of our creativity. We are all creative, and we can open into our personal wellspring by touching a still mind to allow a deeper expression. Sometimes it might be an expression of ourselves, perhaps. But also, it is the world's longing for expression through us. Rumi wrote a really beautiful poem about this. It's translated by Coleman Barks. Coleman Barks was one of the people who spoke in that movie that we saw last week, I Am. His translation of Rumi says, "Bird's song brings relief to my longing. I'm just as ecstatic as they are, but with nothing to say. Please, universal soul, practice some song or something through me." It's very much an expression of our intention in creativity, in creating, to allow our own voice and the universal voice to move through us. And we do this with our attention. Simply making something with attention, with love. Even with necessity, it's done with attention and with caring. Something new will arise. Nourishing and touching the creative well within ourselves. Another practice I offered last week was the practice of not allowing any negative self-judgment, criticism, or doubt, not buying into them. Of course, they always arise, but seeing them when they arise and not believing them. In this way, with our intention, with our simple mindfulness, with our awareness, we begin to nourish the creative wellspring. And we find a certain delight in it. This week, our practice is to come to our senses, to bring our full awareness to our body. In the Anapanasati Sutra, the first two exercises are to be aware of our in-breath and aware of our out-breath. The next two exercises have to do with awareness of body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my entire body. Breathing out, I'm aware of my entire body. Breathing in, I make my body calm and at peace. Breathing out, I practice like this. When our mind begins to be still, it's very easy to be in contact with our body. When we're sitting, we can feel our body, our entire body, our awareness resting with our entire body. And if we find any tension there in our bodies, we relax. We rest in our bodies. We don't hold any tension at all. And there's a certain delight in practicing like this. There's a certain lightness. It's like our body and mind become one, and our breath becomes our inspiration. In traditional Chinese understanding, they speak of this as qi, the life force. Wonderful energy, a wonderful lightness. And it makes our practice delightful. And truly, if we practice with the awareness of our body, not only when we're sitting on the meditation cushion, but when we're moving about our days, if we come back to our body, we will find we are already mindful. Recently, Brother Papai led a retreat here at Mountain Lamp on cooking and nourishment. And one of the things he spoke about was how he really felt that mindfulness had much more to do with heartfulness. That our heart really leads the way in the world. Our heart dictates so much more of our experience. And this was also shown in that movie, I Am. That our heart is the center of who we are, the center from which we move forth. And when we touch our heartfulness, we are much more in contact with our bodies and with the body of the world, the body around us. So I want to suggest one particular exercise for this week, and that is to do one action each day with total attention, directly experiencing through your body, letting go of any thoughts that you interpret what you're doing or that distract you from bodily sensory awareness. Be aware of what you're seeing. Be aware of smells. Be aware of sounds. Anything you touch, whatever you taste. And it should be a delight. It should be a delight to feel the warmth of the sun striking your skin. It should be a delight to hear the call of the hummingbird as it flashes past the window. It should be a delight to stand upright. Know that the bones are moving easily under your skin, in your muscles. Being aware, feeling all of these things, it should be a delight to taste the sun-ripened plum. Let your body delight in the world of your senses. And it's something we can practice as mindfulness all the time, everywhere. Standing up, sitting down, washing dishes, all of it, a sensory wonder. There's another thing that's very helpful in understanding when we talk about sensing with our body, having a felt sense of the world, coming to our senses. There's recent research out that shows that in the prefrontal cortex of the brain, there are two particular channels of thinking. The one is the channel that ruminates, that goes over things many, many times. It's the part of the brain that worries. It's the part of the brain that perseverates. It's the part of the brain that criticizes and is filled with self-doubt. And it tends to hold us captive. It's a stronger part of the prefrontal cortex. But there's another part of the prefrontal cortex. They call it the lateral circuit. And that part coordinates our attention to present moment sensations. It is the part of our brain that becomes aware, becomes stimulated when we are aware of our senses, aware of our body. And when people learn to focus on sensations closely, carefully, with a high level of detail, then the network that ruminates, worries, and doubts gets switched off. And the part of our brain that allows us to focus on our body and our senses comes alive. It allows us to begin thinking creatively. It allows us to greet each moment anew and each situation anew. Research is now beginning to prove that we are able, through our awareness of our senses and our body, to heal ourselves, to short-circuit the perseverating, upset, anxious, depressed part of our thinking processes. So it would be very helpful this week to continue with the practice that we started last week, to be aware when thoughts or internal dialogue that led to judgment, self-judgment, or to self-doubt, or worry, or anxiety, whenever those kind of thinking patterns arise, to immediately pay attention, and this week, come back to our bodies. Come back to our awareness of our bodies. Come and just rest right with your feet touching the ground. Take three breaths. Let your mind be still. And listen. Listen from silence. Listen from the silence within. It's like a meal for our spirit or for our soul. Let the sounds be you. Whatever's there, no judgment. In that way, we really begin to see through that part of the brain, that part of the thinking processes that get caught in going over and over the same story or get caught in worrying. And the more precise you can be in your awareness of your body, awareness of your senses, awareness of the world through your bodily senses, the more whole you will be. Whole in your body, but whole in including the whole universe, the whole world around you. This is a really important practice in mindfulness, but it's also equally a very important practice in creativity. And it's important. It gives this body of the Buddha its true acknowledgement as a sacred vessel. So coming back over and over again to being directly in touch with what is in front of us. And when I say directly in touch, it's through our hands, our feet, our smelling, our hearing, letting the world in, and not letting our mind and our thinking processes interrupt our direct experiencing of what is here. In coming to our senses, there is a marrying of what we perceive as inside us and what we think of as outside of ourselves. In coming to our senses, there is a uniting of body and mind. And it is the union of the opposites that brings something forward, something new. Creation is the product of a marriage. And what arises is a felt sense, an essence, an intuition, an instinct, a new way of seeing that when we give voice or put it to paper or sing out, expresses our creativity. Form gives shape to formlessness. At Mountain Lamp, there's a huge old maple tree by the lake. We see its rough bark, large limbs, and big leaves. But it is the formlessness that surrounds it that defines the branches, the trunk, and the leaves. Light and darkness correspond to each other. The bright light of stars is only apparent because of the darkness of night. And we see the shadows during the day when the great shining sun appears. It is this union of opposites that brings forth the essence of a day, the felt sense of night. We can experience that as an intuition or an instinct within ourselves. And that is what we express. That's what comes forth. I'd like to read a Wendell Berry poem that points to this union of opposites. It's from A Timbered Choir, which is a collection of his Sabbath poems from 1979 to 1997. It goes like this. Those who give their thought to seed, to love and the bringing to birth, must know the sightless underside of earth, and perhaps more than once, for no one goes at no cost to that place where what is dark, more still than the hands of the dead, remembers the light again and starts to move. It is spring, and the little trees that sprouted in the abandoned field 2 years ago, striving to grow, half smothered under the shadows of the tall weeds, now rise above them and spread their new-leafed branches, nothing between them and the light sky, nothing at all. What makes creation is this union of opposites. In a visual sense, it's the light and the shadow playing together that give form. They give visual pleasure. Spatially, it's the form and the formlessness. When we talk about coming back to our awareness of body, I like to think also of being aware of what's behind us as well as what's in front of us. Typically because we see from the front, from our eyes, and that's our main sense. We don't pay any attention to what is behind us or any felt sense of what's there. One very simple practice is coming back to our body and noting what's underneath us, what's behind us, what's above us, as well as before us. We can see that our body is form and our mind is formless. Our thoughts are really intangible. And the uniting of them is our inspiration. It's expressed in our breath. when I speak about form and formlessness, I'm not speaking here about form and emptiness. Emptiness really is something different. I'm speaking more about a duality that has a conceptual basis, form and formlessness. It's like when we're listening and we hear the silence from which sound arises. It's not like we're listening or hearing the sounds. We're hearing the silence, and then out of them arises the sound. Start paying attention to what's in between. I think there's a corollary in our spiritual practice with this, particularly with our practice of mindfulness. Thay often likens our mindfulness to the sun. And when there is something inside of ourselves, a darkness, something that lives, you know, in the sense of negative patterns, thought patterns that go over and over again, we bring the light of mindfulness, the sunlight of mindfulness to those dark places, and they begin to break up. You know, it's like sunlight is purifying. Sunlight is cleansing. And so is our mindfulness too. When we are aware of dark places, habit energies that make us feel bad about ourselves or about others, that make us want to hide or hate the world. When we're aware of those and we bring that light of mindfulness to those dark places, much like Wendell Berry's trees, they grow up towards the light of the sky. And in that light, they're no longer dark. They're illuminated. And out of that union of the dark with the light, out of that union, something new arises. It's neither the habitual thought patterns, nor is it something we expected to be different. It's something brand new. I think that's the corollary with our spiritual practice in this understanding of dark and light. And of course, it is also that uniting of body and mind. We can also say it's uniting of heaven and earth, the highest values, the best qualities of ourselves, with the very grounded and solid, the mundane, and the dark. We experienced this duality when we went to Ireland last June. Jack and I went out to the Skellig Islands. Skellig Michael is a World Heritage Site, a very ragged tooth of an island that sticks up out of the North Atlantic Sea, 10 miles from Ireland. It was built by a small group of monks who had left the coast of Ireland. They were Catholics, but they had a real Celtic bent. They were pretty independent souls, not ruled per se by the papacy in Rome. And they wanted to go to the ends of the world. They had a spiritual longing and an intention to meet God at the edge. And in those days, in the 600s, truly where they went to was the ends of the world. They thought if they continued further out in the ocean, because the world was conceived of as flat at that point, they would fall right off the edge of the earth. Who knows what they would fall into. And they were willing to go into that unknowingness. And the question that we had when we were taking the boat out to the Skelligs was, why did they go here? What motivated them? What was their intention? It was about an hour boat ride through very rough seas before we got to that remote crag And looking at that remoteness and the roughness of the seas and difficulty in getting out there, and imagining those 6 or 8 monks in their skin boats, their kuroks, paddling out. The question that came to mind was, did they go out there as penance, as self-flagellation, as fearing the wrath of God for their sins? Did they go out there to wear a hair shirt? Or did they go out there to touch the light of God? Did they go out there in celebration of creation? So we arrived at the island, and once you got off, there was a trail that went a ways, and then many steps that went right up the steep cliffs of this island. And the island was mostly made out of shale, and the steps had been made by the monks, you know, centuries ago, centuries and millennia ago. And we had to climb them one by one up through very steep, steep terrain. And at last we got to this little landing where there were 6 beehive-shaped huts built out of the slate, and a couple of terraces that were built up where they grew some food. And the monks had lived there for 600 years, from 600 AD to 1200. The amazing thing was, though they had not lived there for 1,000 years, the sense, the feeling sense of that place was one of joy, was one of celebration. It was really clear why they went out there. They went out there uniting the dark, stony, shale, remote island with the light, with the open sky, with the vast ocean, with the unimaginable infinity of God. And that's all you experienced when you were there. It was a wonderful place. Truly, I believe the monks of Skellig had found a way to unite heaven and earth. And it was expressed in all of the things that they created to make that island inhabitable. I am always struck when I think about humanity, when I think about being a human being, how radically different we are from all other creation, from even our nearest relatives, our nearest animal relatives, how hugely different we are, and how much we have come to change and manipulate the environment to really create something new on Earth. In the creations that we make, it's nice to think about something representing heaven, something ethereal, light, and something representing Earth, something grounded, solid, and that the unity of heaven and earth is expressed in the creation of human beings. I remember once when we were at Maui Zendo, Yamada Roshi, who was Aitken Roshi's teacher, came. And it was in the early 80s when there was a large increase in the weaponry that was being made in Russia, and the military here was really amping up, and there were a lot. I mean, you know, there were so many nuclear weapons, enough to destroy the world 1,000,000 times. And they kept building more, and the Cold War kept accelerating, and the language kept getting more heated. And there was a real concern whether we were going to come through this, whether we were going to blow ourselves up, or whether we were going to survive. And when Yamada Roshi was at Maui Zendo, we asked him about, with this mysterious spiritual nature, sacred nature of the world, what would happen to it? What happened to the amazing thing that human beings are? And he said, you know, no matter what, there would be an essence that would still be carried forward. It would be life's yearning for itself. And it is the basis of creativity, and it lives within us. So we hold both the darkness and the light. We are the union of heaven and earth. In the most immediate and personal and felt sense, we are body and mind as one. And when we truly come to our senses, we are neither inside nor outside. We include the entire world. In our practice and in our creativity, however we express that, whatever we do, whatever we make, will include all of that. Because we aren't separate from this creation. We are creation itself. So this week, continue with your practice of creating something in the same way as the assignment was for last week, that if you're doing a project or a particular train of thought or practice that's going through 8 weeks, keep it up. But if you want to pick up something new that you're just doing for this 1 week, that's absolutely fine. And if you want to choose something, something inspires you in one day, do that. As an example of this bringing heaven and earth together, bringing duality together, to create a felt sense, to create an essence, to communicate something, to express something. Find the most simple thing you can do. The most ordinary thing you can do. You don't have to find something grandiose. It doesn't have to be something out of your ordinary life. In fact, the more simple, the more ordinary it is, the more natural it'll be, and the more truly it'll express this essence. So each day, each week, we were learning a new song of practice. And at some point, I will ask you to write a song of practice. So you can be thinking about that. In the meantime, the song that we were going to learn this week is called I Have Arrived. And I'll sing it for you. I have arrived, I am home, in the here and in the now. I have arrived, I am home, in the here and in the now. I am solid, I am free, I am solid.